一直在这个工作，终于过去太西藏扎瓦，学本的西藏太西藏扎瓦，也太西藏就是东方东西。那前去申办登记，学本的那往哪里？那往哪呀？那往哪新？啊那太西的这边根本接不起钱，那不那个呀？那民族申办，那鱼塘以前一个那哪新嘛是吧？工作那些的。他以前人家讲白了，咱老对呢，对比啥新嘛都多一点，他们别对起的，还是大些啦嘛，说是那必须从这哪里呢？这怎么出来的？这怎么出来呢？你参与这个这个嘛，都接不起的，这接不起的是嘛？对些，那你接不起了？你给东西多了呀？你就算那么多啥呀？对你接不来，他就。
Good afternoon. So this morning we're looking at lectures and we looked at the mode of investigation, how investigating to see that all phenomena are free from the four extremes. So we spoke then about how one needs to come to see how phenomena appear to oneself and then investigate whether they exist in that way or not. When we investigate to see then that the mode of appearance and mode of abiding are not in accordance, and we should be investigating, we should be starting with the eye because it's easiest to realize first the emptiness of the person. And we should investigate both the object as well as the apprehender, or the consciousness that's meditating on emptiness, as well as then, of course, emptiness itself also being empty of inherent existence. So this is what we looked at this morning. And this meditation on emptiness is something that we all should make effort in and do consistently. And in addition to meditating on emptiness, it was also mentioned that we need to accumulate virtue so as to power this meditation. And the accumulation of virtue can be done in both in meditation, such as on bodhicitta, love and compassion and the like, as well as in between meditation sessions through practices such as generosity, guarding ethical conduct, etc. Now we move on and come to the next verse. So this next verse is now dealing with subsequent attainment. So what we looked at this morning and last night was in the context of meditative equipoise. Now the Buddha, Bodhisattva, meditating on emptiness. When the Bodhisattva arises from meditation and then engage in their activities, such as their various activities to benefit sentient beings, such as the practice of generosity through teaching the Dharma, guarding ethical conduct and the like, then they when engaging in these activities, they will encounter objects of attachment. So how would the Bodhisattva deal with it? Can I just read the 23rd practice? When you encounter attractive objects, though they seem beautiful, like a rainbow in summer, don't regard them as real and give up attachment. This is the practice of bodhisattvas.
Then I come by a horse, or any people, and
We'll have the experience of when we out and about, we will encounter pleasant objects or beautiful things. So for some it may be an impressive car, and they'll see that this car, and the thought will come, oh, I would like that. Others will see a magnificent home and say, oh, I'd like a property like that. Others may see beautiful flowers and think, oh, these would look lovely in my home and want to pick them, etc. So in all these cases, on encountering the object, this mind of attachment arises. When we see an attractive object, the object appears to us, and how does it appear? Now we've heard it appears truly existently. So the object appears as being truly existent. And so that means we think it exists in the way that it appears. And it appears beautiful and desirable. So we, of course, generate attachment for this truly existent, beautiful object. Now, a bodhisattva, when they encounter the same object, they will, due to the power of their meditation on emptiness, when this object, this beautiful object appears to them, they immediately will think, or could even say naturally will think, or spontaneously will think, that this object does not exist in the way that it appears. Its appearance of true existence and the way that it exists, empty of inherent existence, are contrary to each other. So this appearance is false. So knowing this, then this, when this object, when they encounter this attractive object, knowing that the way that it actually exists is not how it appears, then the attachment for it doesn't arise. So that is quite different for ourselves, of course. When we see a beautiful object, we believe that exists in the way that it appears. And hence, this mind of I want that, this attachment arises for it.
Mm-hmm.
Here the text advises us to deal with this, like for example when we see a beautiful and vivid multicolored rainbow in the summer. When we see such a thing, of course it is beautiful, but we know that this rainbow is not stable. We look at it and we see it and we know that it is something that has arisen independent on a variety of causes and conditions. And not only has it come about independent on causes and conditions, but it is changing, it is not stable. So with that understanding, we can deal with the attachment for the object of it, in this case a rainbow. So then when we encounter other objects and attachment arises, such as a beautiful home or flowers or whatever, then we should apply the same understanding to such an object. So just again, Bodhisattva, when they encounter a beautiful object, in the same way that we would be aware that the rainbow isn't stable and arises independent from causes and conditions, the Bodhisattva would effectively apply that same understanding to any other object and know that this object too is not stable. It has only come about independent on causes and conditions. And as soon as those causes and conditions will change sufficiently, so too does that object. And take another object that we're also familiar with. So if we encounter a man or a woman and they are dressed very well, they've got a lovely hairstyle, they're physically impressive, then we will look at them and immediately attachment arises within us. So a Bodhisattva is seeing the same handsome man or beautiful woman. For them, immediately this mind, due to the habituation they have with the meditation on emptiness, immediately the mind will come that this object is does not exist in the way that it appears. If this handsome man or this beautiful woman existed in the way that she or he appears, then they would not be dependent on causes and conditions, because they would be truly existent. They wouldn't be dependent on other. They wouldn't be dependent on anything. And furthermore, they would be unchanging. But no phenomenon exists in this way. Knowing that this handsome man or beautiful woman does not exist in the way that they appear, but they are rather dependent on a variety of other phenomena, such as causes and conditions, then attachment for that person doesn't arise in the mind of the bodhisattva.
Bodhisattva,
then, when encountering this beautiful woman or this handsome man, they will know immediately that this person doesn't exist in the way that they appear, but rather have rather appear as so spectacularly beautiful or handsome due to a variety of causes and conditions. For example, the way they dress, their physique, their expression they have, maybe the way of talking or that they're praising oneself, etc. So there are all these causes and conditions that come about that lead to the perception of beauty. So the bodhisattva realizes this and realizes therefore this person does not exist in this beautiful object does not exist in the way that it appears. Furthermore, this person, they only want to experience happiness. They don't want to experience even a moment of suffering. And they have they have presented themselves in this way. They've worked out or dressed themselves nicely and done their hair well, etc., so as to look attractive. And they're doing this in order to attain happiness. But this, of course, is not a path to happiness. And furthermore, to do so, they would have encountered difficulties and the like, and therefore not even achieve their goal of happiness in any kind of lasting way. So understanding the aspiration of this person, and understanding that this aspiration cannot be fulfilled, lasting happiness cannot be fulfilled by trying to make oneself physically beautiful or physically attractive, then compassion and love all arise in the mind of the bodhisattva for this person. This way of spontaneously responding of the bodhisattva comes about independent on their familiarity with meditating on emptiness. It doesn't come about causelessly, but rather independent on their tremendous familiarization with the meditation on emptiness.
I'm going to get a little bit of a 就今天你约完再说，吃不约的？那个什么，今天接了，我哎呀，我年龄大了，就顾不住身体。那你就顾不住，以后不顾身体，你那个啥，要不就吃肉，慢慢一个话，弄过来。但你到晚上，今天你给打东西过，忙不上班呢，今天心下来，接下来用吧，用嘛，就感觉在工作就接了，弄完了就不管。
Then so for ourselves, the results would actually be similar. So we ourselves are, of course, ordinary people, but if we engage in meditation on objects such as impermanence or on emptiness itself, and this is something that we've done over a period of time, so we have a strong familiarity with this meditation, and then when we are out and about and we encounter attractive objects, then the attachment that arises for that object will be much less powerful. And that is because even though we are not bodhisattvas and the like, but because of our familiarity with the meditation on impermanence or on emptiness, then when we encounter an attractive object, then we will very quickly be aware that the way that this object appears to us is not how it exists. Rather, it actually arises in dependence on causes and conditions, and these themselves are unstable. This object is not the most beautiful, attractive, desirable object. This is not stable. This will change. If we haven't meditated in this way, then when we see something beautiful, immediately the thought comes, I want this. And this is the mind of attachment. I want. And then the mind may well be followed by, I want even more, and I want more, and I want more. And this is the strengthening of the growth of this mind of attachment, always wanting more, always being insatiated. So, therefore, even for someone like ourselves, the more we meditate on topics such as impermanence and emptiness, the more spontaneously these will arise and be more powerful. And the more powerful our meditation, or the more familiar we are with these objects of meditation, then the weaker their afflictive minds will be. The quality of realization in the mind of the bodhisattva is, of course, incomparable with what we have. However, we've now had a number of teachings on emptiness, and if we take this knowledge that we have acquired and we apply it in meditation, and we do so over a consistent period, then when we encounter attractive objects, then we may not be at the stage where we can spontaneously give rise to an understanding of emptiness because our familiarity remains too weak. But we have sufficient familiarity that we can at least intentionally remind ourselves about emptiness. So when we encounter, for example, someone who's very handsome or very beautiful, and we have the mind of attachment arising, we can then remind ourselves, actually, what is appearing to me, the way this person appears, is not how they exist. This beauty that I'm perceiving This is dependence on causes and conditions. There's nothing findable there. There's nothing that lives up to this great desirability that I have for the object. So we too can remind ourselves in this way. It's not a spontaneous arising mind, but it's one that we can remind ourselves, and that will have an impact on the attachment that arises. Similarly, if we cultivate the minds of love and compassion and the like, then when we meet that same person, we can also remind ourselves, intentionally generate the minds of love and compassion, thinking how this person only wants to experience happiness. However, they don't know the techniques to experience lasting happiness, and they therefore engage in a variety of different activities which do not lead to that result, and in fact may lead to the opposite result being achieved. And in this way, we can intentionally generate the minds of love and compassion.
A further
way that this meditation can help us is that we all have our own varying financial conditions, but there are always going to be those who have conditions much better than ourselves. And it's very easy to have a mind of jealousy or minds of desiring what others have, and thinking about the fantastic conditions and the fortune that others have compared to ourselves. We may look at the situation of others and think, they're so fortunate, they can travel to a number of interesting places, and wherever they wish to go, they have the means to go, or they can dress in the latest fashion, and wherever they go, they look really impressive. And furthermore, if they want to eat out, they can dine at good restaurants and the like, and they can do so without even worrying about the costs. So in a variety of ways, we can look at the conditions of others, and this mind of jealousy can arise, and the mind of wanting this for ourselves could follow. However, if we have an understanding of emptiness, if we've cultivated this understanding of emptiness, we can on one hand apply it to the objects that they are striving for, that they are enjoying, and see that those objects themselves are empty of true existence, that no matter how much, and furthermore, no matter how much the person enjoys in these objects, they cannot fulfill the needs of this person, because they do not exist in the way that the person perceives them to. So thinking like this, then our mind of attachment for those objects that others are enjoying, this will lessen. And our mind of contentment for what we do have, this will grow. And in this way, our mind will become more peaceful. And this is important to bear in mind because we hear about the benefits of meditating on emptiness, and it's often in the context of overcoming afflictions, attaining our goals of liberation and the like. However, there are many more benefits as well, in that if we meditate well on emptiness, our trust in the law of causality, that about cause and effect, this too will grow and strengthen. Likewise, our minds of love and compassion, these too grow and strengthen. So you could say these are this growing trust in course in the law of causality, this growing minds of love and compassion, these are in effect a side effect of the meditation on emptiness. So look at one of these, of this mind of causality, if we, or this understanding of causality, having more trust in it actually has a wide variety of benefits. Because if we have stronger trust in the mind of causality, then our own suffering decreases. So for example, if we have now to meditate on emptiness, we come to have a good understanding and a strong trust in the law of causality, we are going to overcome minds of jealousy towards others or competitiveness with others. We will no longer be thinking that life is so unfair, why is my situation like this and others' situations like that? Why do these things always happen to me? Why do good things always happen over there? And in this way, our competitiveness with others will diminish and we will become happier. Likewise, our mind of jealousy for the conditions that others have will diminish, because we'll understand that what we are experiencing is the result of our own actions, and what others are experiencing are the results of their own actions. And this understanding is an empowering mind, and this is being, and then if we have this kind of, if we have this empowered mind, it's we will not have the contrary minds of being jealous or competitive towards others.
Then Deniki, Sena Jevada, Deniki, Sutumbasmavada, Deniki, Jumari. It is Namja,
Does the right, the strengthening of faith and karma come about from meditating on emptiness? Well, as we've heard with our investigation into whether something exists in the way that it appears, we've heard that if something exists in the way that it appears, in other words, exists as truly existence, it's not reliant on anything else. So to see if it exists in that way, we examine if it exists dependently. And we spoke about this a lot, I think, last night, in terms of the body and the mind, etc. And we come to see that, no, everything is dependent arising. It depends on others, it depends on causes and conditions, etc. So in this way, through our meditation on emptiness, we come to understand dependent arising very, very well. And dependent arising is related, of course, to causality, to the law of cause and effect. So as we're coming to understand dependent arising, we will come to understand karma better, and as our faith in dependent arising strengthens, so too will our faith in karma. Then we'll come to see that all the conditions that others experience and that I myself are experiencing are due to our own actions. And if, for example, in this life my conditions are poor, this is because I have not practiced generosity in previous lives. I've probably been rather overcome by the mind of my sins. Furthermore, if I'm unhappy in this life, I've many problems in the life, this would have come from not guarding ethical conduct in previous lives, and now I'm experiencing the results of this. And if others seem to be having far better conditions than us, then that is because in previous lives they practiced generosity well, they guarded their ethical conduct well, etc. And furthermore, with this understanding of dependence arising, not only does it bring us to an understanding of our current situation and the situation of others, but it will remind us that our own actions now will impact on our future lives. So therefore, if we want to continue to have good rebirths, we need to guard our ethical conduct now so that we can attain future precious human rebirths. If we want to have good conditions in future lives, we need to practice generosity and the like. So all of this, understanding of causality is very closely linked with the understanding of dependent arising. Or let's say that these two understandings support each other. And therefore, as our understanding of emptiness grows, our understanding of dependent arising grows, and therefore our faith also in the law of causality strengthens. And that's how these are related.
那那东西芒果上大外那那硬些钱包的硬些的不切入不了那那那东西那么家芒果上的电子的那么家家伙辛苦的，其实电子的那么家伙辛苦的那那么多个，可电那对你空了手当你家里家那几米几米几岁下下这样对外人，反正他们上哪里不上坡了现在那对，这米几的这块古马古些的。
So before we mention back to meditating on last time emptiness, one's faith in karma and one's minds of love and compassion will grow within oneself. So now, just previously, we looked at how the meditation on emptiness impacts on our faith in the law of causality. So then how does our meditation on emptiness impact on our minds of love and compassion? Or how does meditating a lot on emptiness lead to the strengthening and the growth of the minds of love and compassion? So to understand emptiness well, we need to understand dependence arising well. So if we've meditated a lot on emptiness, we will have a good understanding of dependence arising. So let's take an illustration. When we either meet or we see on the news or we're hearing about someone who's acting in a way that is harmful to others. So it could either be a criminal or maybe a politician who's enthusiastically implementing policies which are harmful to others. How do we tend to respond to such a person? It's usually we criticize them and we say, oh, they're so bad, or they're so selfish, or they're so etc. etc. And we have this critical, negative mind towards them. However, if we have been meditating effectively over a sustained period of time on emptiness, our response will be very different. And this is because we will have a good understanding of dependence arising. And through having a good understanding of dependence arising, we will be aware of the results that will follow from the actions. And because of this familiarity we have now of dependence arising, that is the mind that will spontaneously arise for us. So when we hear about or we meet someone who's engaging in harmful actions, immediately this understanding of dependence arising will come. This understanding that through engaging in criminal activities or enacting policies that are harmful to others, this person is creating the causes for their own unsought suffering. And thinking like that, compassion will arise in us. And similarly, if we meet someone who's very handsome, maybe very wealthy, and because of it, he's really quite full of themselves, very proud, then we may either be quite impressed with their splendor, or we may be quite turned off by their pride. And so whichever way we go, we would have these afflictive minds towards this person, either overly attracted or overly critical of them. However, if we've meditated well on emptiness, we'll understand that this person, due to the pride in their mind, is only going to engage in harmful acts. This pride will lead to them engaging in harmful acts. And that is because it's an afflictive mind, and it will lead to them engaging in acts that are harmful towards others. And from this, they will only accumulate further causes of suffering and experience further suffering in the future. And from knowing that, compassion will naturally arise within us. So this is how our meditation on emptiness actually leads to the strengthening of our minds of love and compassion. If we engage in a sustained manner in the cultivation of the consciousness or the mind understanding, the awareness understanding emptiness, then as our understanding of emptiness grows, our understanding of dependence arising grows. And as our understanding of dependence arising grows, then our love and compassion, as you've just heard, this too will grow and strengthen. And how we ourselves will experience this is when we encounter or hear about people who are causing great harm to others, then instead of responding the way that we do now, we maybe get angry with them and be upset that what they're doing is so harmful, etc. And this can often be a very negative mind and lead to us ourselves accumulating negative karma because we're getting angry at this person or criticizing them and the like. If we are having success in our meditation on emptiness, then instead of criticizing and complaining and getting upset about the actions of others, rather we will be aware that not only is this person harming others and they are suffering, but they are creating the causes which they will definitely experience in the future, and those causes will be very severe, or the suffering they experience will be very severe. So thinking in that way, then compassion will arise in us instead of anger. We will accumulate virtue instead of negativities. So this is maybe you could say a side effect of the meditation on emptiness. Now we come to the first of two quotations to do with this verse. And the first one is from the King of Concentration Sutras. Magicians conjuring forms such as various kinds of horses and elephants are not at all how they seem. Know that all phenomena are like this.
kora hagu goro ba. Tad di nashin, chani seba nami ji yu ganesh nawa yinna yin, jambo chuba nawa ji, nahan du yu la, nani genzin, genzin yore, genzin bacha yore, genzin yomo onge jambo chuba nawa yin wato, nawa nashin jini yo ma res, ya sam tanga, jumba kanji, sam tanga nashin ji, sam kogo res.
So traditionally, magicians were said to produce their illusions on the basis of magical substances or mantras and the like. And they could conjure a variety of objects such as horses, elephants, flowers, etc. Now the magician, when they're conjuring up these illusions, they themselves know that this is an illusion. They're not being fooled by their own magical feats. They're not really thinking that there is now suddenly an elephant in the room. So the magician clearly knows that this appearance is illusory. And they know that because they know it has come about in dependence on causes and conditions. And these would be the magical substances or the mantra, etc. So they are not taken in by this appearance. Similar to this, a bodhisattva who's been meditating effectively on emptiness, they will know that whatever appears to them as being truly existent does not exist in that way. Rather, it is because of causes that there is this appearance of true existence. And the cause is namely the ripening of the imprint of true existence. And this ripening of the imprint of true existence leads to this appearance of true existence. So therefore, the bodhisattva knows that this appearance of true existence is
illusory. Mm.
那没有把那些什么道具改成，怕那样就他妈当然不能那么多，就是通过的呢，将来有嘛的，生过的话，你那些当然就缺，肯定那样的呢，那么就讲出来，那样就，可结果就不能过的，其实在那么那些就有嘛的，什么道具？嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯 too are dependent on causes and conditions, such as how we just heard. And we will come to then see them as being illusory, like a magician's illusions. And in fact, we'll come to see these appearances as being no more real than films that we watch.
I didn't know what a Junju is. Kashi Kangi Nyawai, Tongyu Dime Nanga, Jubu Hinyin, Dangtung Badera Dini Jitari is.
Then there's a quotation from the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. Whatever one is able to perceive doesn't exist in the way that it appears, and resembles an artificial reflection that is just how it exists in essence. So I'll read it a second time. Whatever one is able to perceive doesn't exist in the way that it appears, and resembles an artificial reflection that is just how it exists in essence. So I'm now continuing, we have this mind of two grasping, and we have the seeds of true grasping. And it's because of these that whatever appears to us appears as being truly existent. So on our continuum we have three things. I just said two, but it's three. We have the mind of true grasping, we have the seeds of true grasping, and we have the imprints of true grasping. So it's because of having these that we have this appearance of true grasping. If we didn't have these, we would not have this appearance of true grasping. So in this verse there was reference to a reflection. So a reflection comes about independence on there being a mirror. If there is no mirror, there is no reflection. So therefore the cause of the reflection, or a cause of the reflection, is having a mirror. If the mirror is broken or removed, then there will no longer be a reflection. So similarly, the appearance of true existence is dependent on causes. And those causes are the mind of true grasping, the seeds of true grasping, and the imprints of true grasping. If these three are eliminated, there will be no appearance of true grasping. So no appearance of true existence. So now we come to the next verse, and so this is about unpleasant objects, or seeing that hatred is empty. So this is now the next verse. So this is very similar to what we've heard before.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I just read this verse. All forms of suffering are like a child's death in a dream. Holding illusory appearances to be true makes you wary. Therefore, when you meet with disagreeable conditions, see them as illusory. This is the practice of bodhisattvas. So let's start by looking at the illustration here, the example of a dream. So if in a dream, dreams that one gives birth to a much wanted child, and then one will experience in one's dream great joy. But then if that child dies, one will experience tremendous suffering. Then one wakes up, and of course one knows that that dream was illusory, and the whole thing that whole experience was false. So this is then similar to our other experiences. If we can come to see that that the experiences are not how they appear, or the events are not as how they appear, then these resulting minds of happiness and suffering won't come. So for example, if in the dream, once the birth of the child is seen as illusory in the dream, then when in the dream it's not going to give rise to great joy. Or likewise, the death of the child in the dream. If one knows in the dream that this is just a dream, then one is not going to experience suffering about something that doesn't exist. And similarly, if in our waking state now, when we encounter unpleasant or undesirable objects, whatever those may be, the way we currently relate to these objects is we believe this appearance. There's this appearance of true existence, and we grasp at that, believing that this is how the object exists. However, and then from that, the resulting afflictive minds come, and we experience suffering at having met something unpleasant, something undesirable. However, if we have cultivated the wisdom understanding emptiness, then when we meet any object, we'll know that the way that it appears and the way that it exists is not in accordance. So in this case, the case of the unpleasant object, the unwanted object, when we meet that and it appears as being truly existence, awful, then we will not believe that appearance. And by not believing that appearance, then the resulting afflictive minds will not arise. If we take an illustration that we're probably all too familiar with, if we encounter someone who's angry and they then engage in an argument with us, then we tend to ourselves to give rise to the mind of anger and respond to them in an argumentative manner. And then we have conflict between the two people. Or if we don't respond, still our mind is disturbed, and it is certainly not peaceful, but our mind is angry. So this is how we tend to respond. However, if like a bodhisattva we have been meditating over a sustained period on emptiness, then we will have come to understand dependent arising very well. And if we've understood dependent arising very well, in particular have great familiarity with this, then when we encounter a person who's angry and is wanting to argue with us and express their anger towards us, then with this understanding of dependent arising, we will immediately be aware that this person now is suffering. This person now has a mind dominated by the afflictions, such as anger, such as pride, etc. And this person actually has no freedom right now. The afflictions are dominating this person so successfully that they are acting now in a negative way, accumulating the causes for further suffering. So they are suffering now and they will suffer in the future. So we would be able to give rise to such thought due to our strong familiarity with the meditation on emptiness, and therefore our mind will stay calm and will stay peaceful. In other words, we'll be practicing patience. And furthermore, we will generate compassion for the suffering sentient being. Knowing how we tend to respond, even if we encounter someone who's just in a bad mood, and even just them being in a bad mood can make us upset, let alone if they actually express that bad mood on us. So knowing about how the current situation we're in, we should take this as an inspiration to practice like the bodhisattvas and to cultivate this understanding of emptiness, so that when we do meet these unfavorable conditions, such as a person who's in a bad mood or who is angry and expressing it towards us, that due to having practiced like a bodhisattva, we can actually respond like a bodhisattva. And in particular, what this means here is that due to our familiarity with emptiness, immediately or spontaneously, an understanding of dependent arising will arise within us. And we will be reminded that this person is now dominated by the afflictions and they are acting without any freedom. And in this way, our mind stays calm. We are not perturbed by the afflictions of someone else. Rather, our mind is staying calm and we're practicing patience. And furthermore, compassion for the suffering of others arises in our mind. And then there's a quotation from the King of Concentration Sutra again. So this is similar to what we saw in the reverse. Just like if a young woman has a dream in which she gives birth to a son and then sees him die, know all phenomena to be just like the joy she experienced at his birth and the sadness at his death.
Mm-hmm. Simple as it.
So the meaning is exactly as we've had before, that so all phenomena, we should relate to all phenomena in the same way as this illustration with the dream. Whereas in a dream, someone gives birth to a much wanted child and experiences joy, and then experiences tremendous suffering when this child dies. So that is, we know, is a false situation. It is not how anything exists in reality. We should relate to all phenomena in the same way, that when we investigate the way that phenomena appear, and we try to see if they exist in that way, we'll see that they do not. And so, and therefore, they are illusory, like a dream. And then there's a quotation from a Tibetan Lama called Karakpa. So I'll read it twice. All phenomena are like the illusions of a dream. No true or real functioning thing exists at all. Don't allow overt clinging to the non-existent appearances of functioning things to grow stronger. So again, all phenomena are like the illusions of a dream. No true functioning thing exists at all. Don't allow overt clinging to the non-existent appearances of functioning things to grow stronger. We should come to know then, the meaning of this verse is similar to before, that we should come to know all phenomena to be false like a dream. In other words, the way that they appear is not real, it's false. So we should relate then to all phenomena, whilst appearing to be truly existent, they do not exist in this way. Rather, this appearance is mistaken, and we should relate to it as being illusory, like a dream. So stop here now at the conclusion of this verse. This afternoon we've looked at the practice of a bodhisattva in subsequent attainment, so how a bodhisattva relates to objects of attachment and aversion. And as we've been hearing throughout this text, the bodhisattvas being our role models, someone that we want to be included amongst, we should practice in the same way that they do, so as to develop the same qualities as they have developed. So we should then come to, we should meditate over a sustained period, regularly and over a sustained period, on emptiness. And as we do so, our understanding of dependence arising will grow. And this will have other wanted results of our faith in the law of causality, as well as our minds of love and compassion occurring. And so we should then try and relate in a similar manner as the bodhisattva to the objects that we encounter. So whether they are attractive objects or unattractive objects, we should try and relate in the same way as the bodhisattva, and thinking that this way that this object appears is not how it exists. And if we think like this, based on repeated reflection, then the resulting afflictions, such as attachment or anger, will dissipate, will weaken. Because if we see something as particularly desirable and something therefore that we want, and we realize that actually the way that it appears is not how it exists, it's only like this in dependence on causes and conditions, and is not stable. As soon as it meets other causes and conditions, it too will change. Then suddenly this desirability, this thought of I must have, this starts to weaken and fade away. Likewise, when we encounter someone who maybe we don't have a good relationship with and we need to engage with them, but they're clearly in a bad mood, then instead of giving rise to afflictions in our own mind, we remind ourselves that this person's current situation, this too, is not as it appears. It is not, they are not truly existent angry or upset or bad. Rather, this it has arisen in dependence on causes and conditions. It's not stable, it will change. So there's no need to respond in a strong manner towards this person. Similarly, knowing that this person is suffering and that they do not have freedom, but rather have a mind dominated by afflictions, then we should give rise to compassion for them. And if they speak to us even in a harsh manner, criticize us, swear at us and the like, our mind will stay peaceful and we'll be able to respond in a skillful way. So this all will come about through cultivating the wisdom understanding emptiness over repeatedly and over a sustained period. Then we'll come to see that objects as being illusory, as being dreamlike, and therefore there's no need to respond to them in the way that we do now, but rather respond to them as something as having no more true existence than a dream or a magician's illusion. And then further to this, our minds of love and compassion and our faith in the law of causality. These two will grow. So we'll so the next week we'll continue from the next practice. So the next practice then starts a new outline. So we today have today and yesterday we looked at ultimate bodhicitta. Then previous to this we have been looking at conventional bodhicitta. Now from next time we'll start with the main practices that a bodhisattva needs to engage in order to attain enlightenment, in other words, the six perfections. And that's where we'll start next time. So are there some questions for today?
I was just referring back to this morning, talking about the emptiness of emptiness, and it being a dependent arising, there's dependence on others. And if I heard
right,
the teachings, or
Buddhist
teachings, for
instance. So this morning we spoke about the emptiness of emptiness, and that emptiness too is not truly existence, but it's dependence others, for example, on the teachings of the Buddha. So, can Gena just say something more about that? Then Gena? Then it should be also, Tony, the Tony, the Kola Kedam Sonson, then Kedam Selsidane Self Operation, then Karitani Tony, Tony Rebe, the young Tendro Re, then Shema Turgi Re, Shema Kabule, then Sangi Sunsu Re, then Eddie Self Hobbinson, the Dakan Sonata.
当过当地的中国，当上空，是吧？因为当上的东西来的是绿化大，东西是绿化大，绿大上面的人呢，过节目主谋的节目，当年不让人节目主谋的节目，钱，他说有个人就有几个人嘛，对，你节目主谋的节目钱呢，节目钱就刚刚就是你妈年嘛，多少岁了？你多少岁了？你年有个二十多年才的，发了个大，是，这东西才是绿大把一年挣钱的。
So yes, emptiness is empty of inherent existence or true existence, and this is because if it was not, it would exist truly, which would mean it's not reliant on anything at all. So rather, it is a dependence arising. So what is it dependent on? Now I'm going to mention a few things that emptiness itself is dependent on. So one, emptiness is dependent on a realization, on a mind realizing it. So that there needs to be a mind realizing emptiness. So that this shows a relationship of dependency on other. Secondly, this mind is also imputing emptiness onto emptiness. So emptiness is this mere imputation. So emptiness is a mere imputation imputed by a mind. And then thirdly, how did this yogi come to the point where they could realize emptiness, and where they could realize emptiness? This is because previously they would have studied emptiness and they would have meditated on emptiness. And how could they do that? A teacher taught them. And how did the teacher teach them? Because the teacher had learned from another teacher, etc. And this went back to the Buddha, who realized emptiness, taught emptiness, and thereby practitioners since then have been studying and meditating on emptiness. So then that is the relationship of dependency from the Buddha to the realization of emptiness now. So this realization of emptiness and emptiness itself is dependent on mind's realizing it, on imputation by mind, and on the Buddha himself having initially taught emptiness. So those are the reasons.
Ini zaman untuk di dalam tapasan di dalam sebujang situ, jadi si besar di dalam sebujang itu kini, di cuci cik si, cuci cik ini di topi yang cik cik si, cik cik apa? Ini dah, susulan dengan tu per sesang jisang jukeba jisang ini di topi pun ada cik cik kini di situ jual le, jadi susulan lagi dengan tu topi tu cik cik mahu kaya mana ni?
那我们几亿是不是呀？那几学校呀，这下面的工作人员嘞，那你们呢？这所说的那几个，我们几亿的投资都这，忙不快，或者这所说的，这些都这些呢，也不是，那是我们几亿的投资，企业这些人吧，这，这些人呢，超过了，那个，俺这个说是牛人呢，这是蛮牛人呢，这些学校的，这，我们几亿的这些新的这些人呢，你那样这个。 Then next time we meet is actually the main day of Sakadat, 15th of the Tibetan fourth month, or fourth Tibetan month. So that is the main festival day. So then, in speaking with Andy a while ago, we agreed that we would have a shorter teaching of just an hour, and we would also then have a puja, either before or after, I can't remember. So my request is, if you're going to come, then please do bring some offerings for that puja, so that one makes connection and creates a lot of virtue. Because on this day, throughout the Buddhist world, the pujas will be being performed. So if we all individually also make offerings, then we too will be accumulating a tremendous amount of virtue. Or if as an individual one doesn't have the opportunity to buy something, then that's fine, maybe just give a couple of dollars to the Dharma Center, because the Dharma Center too will be buying some offerings. And then in that way, one can directly contribute to the puja and accumulate a lot of virtue. Then, thank you, I'm finished.